All right, so here we are live at CSS Working Group face to face.
A Coruña in Spain at the Agalia headquarters.
Yeah, this is the first time since Eric and I started working together that we've like been in the same physical place. It's
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yep.
So it's been pretty good, I think. What do you think so far?
Yeah, been some very interesting things discussed. I mean, some things that only a real nerd would find interesting. As with every working group meeting, you know, there are issues that are effectively, we discovered this one very, you know, obscure interaction. How do we want to resolve it? And then that discussion goes on for 45 minutes.
Right.
But then you have topics like today, this morning, a proposal for decorating gaps in grid.
Oh, interesting.
And that did not take 45 minutes because everyone was like, this is really cool. It's a good proposal. Here are some questions we have about, you know, can we take this further than it currently stands, or do we want to defer that? In the end, the discussion pretty quickly came to, yeah, let's turn that into an editor's draft. So there will be an actual editor's draft of CSS gaps and rules, I think is what we came up with for a name.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it sounded like I was surprised just because I wasn't there this morning because I had to have an emergency trip to the dentist. Not really emergency. It wasn't painful or anything, but one of my crowns just decided to fall out.
And you got it dealt with.
Yeah, got it dealt with thanks to like the Herculean efforts of my fellow Agalians who live here. So thanks for that. Yeah. I think it's been really good. We had an event last night.
Mm-hmm.
And Tab Atkins was supposed to be on the event, but he got stuck in
Amsterdam.
And so Eric filled in on the thing for him, and I was left to sort of try to MC that. I think it was a pretty good event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a fair number of local developers show up.
Yeah,
and a whole lot of the working group was there, and when the developers had questions, there were a whole lot of people in the room that could answer them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I liked that we ended about 15 minutes early.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that we had a chance to just mingle and go talk to them because that was, they actually had to ask us to leave. They had to say, hey, we're wrapping up now. Yeah.
By the way, the building closes in a few minutes. Yeah. Everybody out.
Yeah. But there was some really, really interesting conversations with some of the students. I was talking to a group of first year students and one senior.
Mm.
And they had like really a lot of thoughts on different things. They were still really bent about Flash. They kind of blamed it on Adobe.
Okay.
That was kind of interesting. So we didn't get to finish that conversation, unfortunately, because we had to leave. But yeah, it was good. So we're hoping to, throughout the week, pull in some people and just ask them,
mm-hmm.
what's fun, what's interesting, what's painful.
Right.
Yeah. So see how it goes.
Cool.
We're here live at CSS Working Group face-to-face at Agalia. And I'm here with Rachel Andrew. And I don't think anybody's ever done this before, right? Like just done like a little chat from CSS Working Group face-to-face?
No, I don't think so. They've not dragged me into one anyway, so...
Can you help explain, like, what is it like at one of these, and maybe, like, what do you look forward to? What do you, you have some items on the agenda. What are they?
Yes, I've got some things on the agenda for the reading order item spec that I'm working on, which is a proposal to essentially give developers a way to say that we should follow the sort of visual order, the reading order of a grid or a flex layout, as opposed to always following the DOM order, which is what currently happens. So that turns out to be quite complicated to spec. So I think there's going to be lots of issues coming up over the next few months as we've got an experimental implementation in Chrome. So yes, it's quite exciting. It's something I've been trying to push forward for quite a while. I'm very pleased to have those issues on the agenda and be sort of moving it forward.
Yeah, I think we mentioned this in a recent Agalia chat that like we discussed this last time we hosted.
Yes, it's what happens here, obviously.
Yeah. Last time we hosted, you and I had discussed this, that we should do a thing like this. And I'm really happy to see. I hope I get a chance to contribute in some way to that, because I think it's a really good... should have happened a while back.
Yeah. It's something we should have done, I think, when we did Grid, because we basically caused a problem with the way that Grid and Flex works, and now we're kind of coming around to fixing the issues. So
definitely. So yeah, I really enjoy when we get together. Do you find it's like very productive, actually?
Yes. Yeah, I think the nice thing about all getting together is, you know, we all work on different bits of CSS. You know, none of us, apart from maybe Elika, are like experts in absolutely everything.
Right.
And so, you know, normally when there's meetings, you sort of look at the agenda. You know, we have our weekly sort of call. And you look at the agenda like, oh, well, these aren't any of my things, really. And so you sort of check your email and do other bits while you're listening in. I think when we get together, you get to discuss actually in person a lot more of the bits and pieces that maybe you don't take as much notice of. And that's quite interesting. You get to hear a bit more of the sort of the bigger picture, as it were. You know, it's a room full of people who are just really, really good at this and know all this stuff in depth. So there's definitely a lot to learn about the things that I don't normally cover.
Yeah, I think one thing that is really great about these events like this, or just TPAC or whatever, is even the stuff that's not on the agenda, really. It's the thing that you're saying there, I think, that you don't get in the online, even when we're in person, is the ability to just sort of like, you're having lunch with somebody, you go for a walk with somebody, you whatever, and then you get struck up in a conversation and you say, oh, I'm really interested in that too. We should talk about that. What if we, and you know, new things are born and re-energized that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the reading order stuff, you know, we mainly discussed that last time at lunch and in the breaks.
Yeah.
You know, it was something that we flagged up during the meeting, but it wasn't really an agenda item. And so that discussion was something that happened kind of as a back channel. And I think lots of that kind of thing happens. And also I think in person, you just get to see how sort of excited people are about the different things they work on.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people would be quite surprised about that, about actually how much people care about specific things that they're pushing forward. And I think, you know, you get that feeling from people. You realise why they're so, you know, adamant that we should be doing something a certain way or whatever, because, you know, you've got the sort of whole picture when we're together, and that really helps.
All right, so we got this is the crossover episode where we have Yuna from the CSS podcast.
Woo!
Award-winning CSS, Emmy award-winning CSS podcast.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, so we just wanted to like just stop and talk to people who are here. So do you have some things that are like on the agenda that you hear that you're really pushing that you care about? Or are you here in more like me, the general capacity?
So for me, things that I'm interested in are being talked about right now actively. So things like anchor positioning resolutions. But mostly it was really convenient for me to stop by because I was already in Europe for CSS Day.
All right.
And then I saw a bunch of people from the working group there. So we talked, you know, a little pre-discussion about some of the issues. That was really fun.
Yeah.
And then I'm going back to Amsterdam after this. So I thought, while I'm in Europe, might as well come in person. It's so much better than joining online.
Yeah.
Which I usually do, the virtual face-to-face. But yeah, definitely excited to see movement resolutions on Anchor. I want to see forward movement on Masonry. That's been a point of discussion also in the working group. There's a few other items too that I think it would just be great to get resolutions on and move forward with.
I think the reading order thing we were just talking with Rachel about would be really good too.
Yes.
yeah. Can we say that like just completely coincidentally that we both are leaving here and going to Italy for a brief stint?
I know, that's funny.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me when I left TPAC. Ryusuke from Apple and I both wound up literally in Florence together. We had dinner a couple nights in, so that was pretty interesting.
That's cool.
yeah, so the discussion so far, what do you think is the best thing, the worst thing, the most boring thing? Give me one take.
I think it's interesting because there's some big questions that still need to be answered, specifically around shorthands, like shorthand defining some of these CSS properties. if that's possible, one, mm-hmm. if it's a good idea, two, right. how things should interact. Like, there's a lot of different ways that you can also combine these features when you're talking about shorthanding. Like, mm-hmm. specifically with Anchor, that's one that kind of came up, but there's other ones that we were talking about, just the general concept. And then what goes into the shorthand, too? Like, what properties do you want to include there? What's the order? How do you differentiate between things like custom identifiers of, you know, options that you've created versus what are defaults the browser provides?
Right.
So I think that those conversations are really interesting. Like, how do you make it all work?
Yeah, I liked the conversations that we were having earlier around anchor positioning and, like, the disagreements about, like, how you lay them out, because there's like, well, there was one proposal that Elika had that was like about using 100% to mm-hmm. mean 100% of the sort of area that you were laying out. And when you hear her say it, it's like, well, that makes a lot of sense. But then somebody else points out, like, that's not the way that percentages work anywhere else in CSS. And so we don't like that. And like the back and forth and the debate and everything, I wish people could see a little bit more
Yeah.
the conversations that go into it and how long it takes. I wanted to say that you, like, you and I also were kind of involved in anchor positioning, like, really early on in OpenUI.
Yeah.
It was still, like, very way back idea.
It's changed a lot.
Yeah. And I remember for the better. I remember you did a lot on that. I thought you had a lot of insightful things, but I do like where it's going.
I like where it's going. I'm happy to see it actually in browsers and all the browsers working on it.
Yeah.
Those discussions are really interesting. Like, when we talk about what does percentage mean in the context of insets and specifically, like, different inset areas, and how does that work with spanning versus, like, being in a single cell of the inset area grid?
Right.
There's so many open questions for any of these topics. You can get really deep.
Right.
And with Anchor, like, we were talking about this 3 years ago.
Yeah, right.
It's taken that long to just even get it to a place where we're having these deeper conversations.
I mean, it's actually pretty good. So, like, I've worked on other things like Inert and Focus Visible, and we did a show after they both kind of in the same release cycle, more or less, like, landed very quickly one after another. And we did a show after and talked about them. And when we first started talking about them, we had to go back and look at our notes, but it was 7 years.
Wow.
7 years from the first discussions until they shipped in the last browser. So
yeah, that things take a long time.
Yeah. Flexbox, I went back and looked at the thing. The Flexbox discussions are even longer. And if you like really go back to the real beginnings of the first time somebody suggested, I think it was Elika, it's like even longer than most of the histories that people tell you that sound so bad. But yeah, things can take a long time. So,
and I feel like that happens a lot too, where people will talk about a certain feature,
mm-hmm.
container queries, for example.
Yeah.
That's something the developers have wanted for a long time, but either the tech's not there yet, or there's not really a path forward. Even like with Anchor, just bringing it back to that, there's a lot of things that we want in the spec that we don't know how to solve yet.
Yes.
Like when you change positions, how do you, you know, identify that you've shifted positions and style that? That's really challenging. Like, especially if you're using some of the auto options for, like, flipping.
Yeah.
How do you hook into that? Well, you don't have an answer yet.
That's a great, I mean, the container queries thing is, like, really interesting. We were talking about the things that happen at these, and the last time we had this here, Rachel's reading order thing mm-hmm. came out of discussions that we had here last time, and container queries actually kind of, they got unblocked here because we worked on it really hard, and then we came with an idea that was much simpler than what we have now, because it was the thing we knew we could get done, you know. And David said, I think we can do better. It's amazing the things that happen from the conversations and the things that block it and ultimately get things unblocked, you know.
Honestly, it's amazing how much happens in the few days that we all get together.
Right? Because it's like 3 or 4 days. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was even, like, this event feels like it's even more extended because a lot of the folks happened to be at CSS Day last week.
Yeah.
But, you know, standards take a long time. A lot of work is async. There are weekly meetings, but there's nothing like sitting down and hammering on something with a whiteboard. You don't really get that as easily virtually.
And you don't get a lot of opportunity to take the thing that you're kind of interested in, but isn't sort of far enough along as much as you do when you have, like, these, like, times when you can maybe be having a drink afterward and just like casually talking about it. Like,
new ideas come out of that too.
Yeah. Some of the stuff that like Rob is working on. And I remember you and I and Mia and Rob all talked about it at the New York face to face. And yeah.
The contrast color stuff we talked about at the New York face to face.
Yeah, right. So I think, I mean, there's no substitute for these kind of things. Anyway, thanks for stopping by and talking to me.
Yeah, I'm glad
we're going to have one of these from from a real face-to-face. I don't think anybody's ever done that. So
thanks for doing this. This is fun.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Here with Andrea Botea, who is a programmer here at Agalia and is working on line clamping in CSS. So, Andrew, what's line clamping?
Yeah, so, you know, YouTube comments. You have a long comment, and it shows two lines, an ellipsis at the end of the second line, and a show more button. How do you do that with CSS? Well, in 2009, there was no way to do that. And, like, now there is a way, but it's kind of broken. So, back in 2009, Apple added a WebP line clamp property that lets you clamp based on a number of lines, and they actually made it require two other properties, which were old versions of Flexbox. It also doesn't exactly do what you want because it places the ellipsis, but the remainder of the like of the content overflows the element, so you need overflow hidden. It doesn't. Like, even with overflow hidden, you might have a padding through which the clamp lines still show. It's also sort of broken for many reasons. So we're thinking of fixing that. So the idea would be to sort of clean up a bit the behavior of WebKit line clamp. There's some web compatibility issues, so we can't just fix everything. And add a new line clamp property, which would have the right behavior. And that would also let you clamp based on a height, not just on a number of lines.
Okay. So I would say something like paragraph line clamp 2 for like 2 lines. Is that the general idea?
So you would just have line clamp 2.
Okay.
And that would clamp to 2 lines. And if you want to clamp based on a height, you would set line clamp auto and then either height to 100 pixels or maybe max height.
Oh, I see. And so if I say 200 pixels, which my text lines are almost certainly not going to come to exactly 200 pixels, what will happen in that case?
So if you have, the last line which fully fits, like it will be clamped to that.
Okay.
And if you have max height rather than height, the height of the element will be set to the end of the line as you would expect.
Oh, I see. So you would, if you're using line clamp, you would, and you want some kind of a upper length bound, you would much preferentially use max height instead of just plain height.
Yeah. You like I have a demo where you might want to use a height rather than max height, which is when you're like a demo where the height animates. And then you can see the clamping like changing as the height animates. And there you would want height, but I think that might be an use case.
Interesting. Okay, and so if you've clamped to a height and a number of lines, and there are more lines than that.
Yep.
And let's, what do you do with the overflow in that case?
Yeah, so there are two very different versions of, well, there are two very different proposals for what to do with that. The one that is currently in the spec is that that content gets completely discarded. It does not get laid out. It actually works based on fragmentation, which is as if you were printing things in a different page, like you would print in a PDF or just printing a website.
Right.
And so that content gets fragmented into a separate page, and that page gets discarded. that is that could be implemented currently in Chromium without too much work, but it would be very hard to do in other browsers because of the way that their layer engines work.
Okay.
So the other proposal, which I'm currently implementing in Chromium, is those lines are there, but they behave as if they had visibility hidden.
Okay. So then you would ideally be able to reveal them in some way, perhaps programmatically. But
You would, if you would have to remove line clamp.
Right.
Like the idea is that nothing after the clamp point, nothing after the ellipsis gets shown,
right.
And everything should look visually as if there was no content after that.
Okay. And then the ellipsis, that's automatically generated?
Yep.
And are we leaving it up to browsers to decide how to ellipsize?
That is one thing that we'll be discussing this afternoon, I think. My implementation currently uses the current behavior of WebKit line clamp in Chromium,
okay.
Which is not very good in some cases. It behaves this like it behaves to some extent the same as text overflow ellipses, but I was discussing it earlier with Florian Rival, who is an expert on these kinds of things, and he was saying that is actually kind of broken in some cases, so maybe that will have to change.
Okay, well I mean determining how the ellipsis should appear and what interaction, if any, it should have is probably an area that the working group should be addressing anyway.
Yeah, that gets complicated when you have bidi text, like text in Arabic, which goes right to left, mixed with text which goes right left to right in the same line. And where do you place the ellipses in those cases?
Right, and then if you're quoting now that material on a page that's laid out using Japanese, top to bottom, it gets super crazy, and those are all things we'll be discussing. So this is actually happening this afternoon at the working group. We're having this discussion about line clamp and how it should act. And
it's about so as we were having these parallel proposals, we noticed some things, some questions that could be resolved independently of both proposals, so that they would apply to both. And those are the questions that we will be discussing at some later point in some later CSS working group meeting.
Right.
We will be discussing or looking at the proposals in more detail and seeing if we actually put the one that I'm working on Chromium in the specification.
Right, because that's part of this process, is that oftentimes these, particularly when we have something new, it doesn't all get decided in an afternoon or even a single face-to-face or a single conference call or whatever. The working group gives a thumbs up to, yes, let's, this is how we think the basics should be, and let's see how that implements. And then you're working on the implementation. Ideally, you implement in time for the next face-to-face or even sooner. What the working group decided on, and then you come back with, okay, so I did that, and here are the things that came up that I didn't know how to answer, because we hadn't decided that, so we need to decide those things, and here's how it turns out that interacted with, grid layout, or margin trim, or whatever else is being worked on, or that is being supported. What do we do when you've done this, and you've done this, and what those two things should do are in direct contradiction, one wins and how do we figure that out. So that's all part of the process, and it's sometimes why people will hear about, oh my gosh, they're gonna add something, line clamp, they're gonna add line clamp to CSS, when can we have it? It's like, that's a process. we're figuring it out, and we're taking the time to find out how it fits in with everything else that we're already used to.
Yeah.
So that you don't have this one thing that people start using it and then saying, okay, I use that, but it broke these six other things I was doing that are perfectly reasonable, and why is this so broken?
Yeah, and I'm currently in the implementation, I'm figuring out how it has to interact with Ruby, like furigana in pronunciation in Japanese, how it has to interact with margins when you have like multiple nested elements with margins and borders and paddings and everything inside the LangClamp container.
Right.
And those are like, I have an idea for what the result should be, which at some point we'll have to check with the working group.
With the working group, right.
But it's also hard to figure out how to implement that in the way that I'm thinking of it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the implementation, like for something with floats that I was thinking, the implementation was so complicated that it was better to just do something else, even if it gives authors, like web developers, less flexibility, but it would be a lot simpler to implement, and it's not clear that that flexibility is needed.
Okay, yeah. Well, these are the things we figure out as part of the process. Cool. Andrew, thanks a lot.
Sure.
All right, so get an early start this morning. We have Jonathan from Wix. So tell us, Jonathan, what are you working on with CSS right now?
Hi, so these days mostly working on animation stuff. I'm trying to help a bit around the view transitions where I can and contribute from our experience at Wix. We had a few requests that already got a few changes in, like adding the view transition type. And now we're talking about adding some sort of conditional selector that lets you style elements based on whether you enter the page via a view transition. So you can, for example, disable some animations that weren't required entrance animation, stuff like that. But the major part of what I'm working on is currently trying to edit a draft for a spec for an animation trigger, which is a mechanism to allow you trigger animations based on a timeline. Currently, the most interesting case is a view timeline. So it's building on top of the constructs that we already have for view timelines and view timeline ranges. So you can say, I want to trigger an animation when an element enters the viewport, but because view timeline ignores transforms and stuff like that, it will know when the actual position of the element enters the viewport, and you can configure it same way that you configure scroll animations. So you'll be able to trigger animations no longer with intersection observer and some hacks like that. It will all be declarative in CSS, and then you can change the behavior, for example, trigger the animation again and again every time the element enters and exits and re-enters. Mm. Or you can tell it to animate in reverse when it's exiting, or play pause for animations that play indefinitely. So this is something that I think is really cool, because browsers will be able to, you'll be able to set the animation beforehand, and the browsers will know, oh, this element is not just hidden, it's actually going to do an entrance animation, so I know what you're doing. And it will avoid all sorts of stuff. For example, if your JavaScript breaks, then the element will still show up and won't stay hidden, and it's going to avoid a lot of bad stuff that's currently happening. And most importantly, like Yuna usually say at her talks in conferences, like one less dependency. Mm-hmm. So this is also very important. Other proposals that I have that I hope to get to after we get this merged and approved by the working group is stuff to help progress with group effects in web animations level 2. Stuff, there's a lot of brilliant stuff there that was already written by Rob Flack and Brian Birtles, and I hope to get some changes there to help this progress. And also, I have a proposal how to get that also into declarative syntax in CSS level 2. Then there's also an addition of a new property, align, to maybe get be able to do staggering animations. So if you want to have multiple animations and have them synced in a way that they'll do a nice looking staggering. Mm-hmm. So have native way to stagger and do stagger animations in CSS, web animations. That could be really cool. And after that, I have some prototype for what you can call a hover timeline or a pointer timeline. Mm-hmm. And I hope to show this to people while I'm here in the face-to-face. And after that, like, there's tons of ideas.
Well, I just wanted to say that I'm glad that we got you in here because, you know, normally when we talk about these things, it tends to be, like, people we're talking about tend to be either some invited expert or, like, somebody from one of the big browsers like Google or Apple or Mozilla or Microsoft. But you're from Wix. And I think it's excellent that you come and that Wix is so active and that also sometimes you focus on the things that other people aren't focused on. We were just talking last night about how I look at the HTTP archive data a lot and it's just like Wix is all the way at the top with a lot of stuff on there. And yeah, I think we forget like how much of the web gets created by, you know, people using Wix.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And it's great that you know Wix understands and cares about where its bread and butter is from, right? From the web and reinvest in it. So yeah, I just also wanted to give y'all credit for investing in SVG, for example.
Yeah.
So you've been investing with Agalia, helping Agalia get the layer based SVG in WebKit mm-hmm. working, all done. So thanks for that.
That's a great pleasure that we can help in that. Yeah, because this is like a long time dream of me personally, and really we're really hoping that, because SVG has really got neglected for a decade now, mm-hmm. and it's way behind, and it got us so many beautiful things into the web and things that were ported into CSS, and really what the way we see it is SVG is like this like nature conservation, mm-hmm. It's a beautiful, and we can do beautiful things on the web with it, but because it has so many rough edges and so many issues, then many people just don't want to touch it, mm-hmm. so we have to give it some love and some help to like get all this issues out of the way and dust off all the code bases, you know, the browsers, so that we can again start making more beautiful things. And it requires, yeah, some effort,
yeah,
from everyone. And we're really happy to be able to give our share.
Great. Maybe we can get some other people to join you in that investment. We can get even more done.
Yeah.
All right.
We hope.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks.
Okay, Miriam, Suzanne. Superstar container queries and layers and all the good things. Nesting too, I guess. Yeah.
Well.
And now colors.
Sure.
Colors.
And I have regions. Opinions on these regions. Things. Is that?
Regions is the big news of CSS working group here. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I think once we ship regions, we're done. So.
Until the next thing.
Maybe. Until the next thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, thus, there are no actual concrete plans to do regions that is specifically called that, but.
Yeah, I think you're not allowed to use that name because it scares people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I saw a demo that looked a lot like it.
So, what do you think is the best thing that we've talked about this week, or the best thing that's happened, could be in working group or outside of working group?
Oh yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's been a good week. I think we've made it through a lot of issues, although I'm never sure if we check how many we close versus how many new issues we open.
Yes.
I'm not sure that that would make us happy to find the answer there. I'm pretty happy that yesterday we made progress on colors.
Yeah.
It wasn't exactly the answer I wanted, but it's a lot better than what we have now. So I'm excited for wide gamut colors to have a solution. I think there's some other ones I was excited about too, but you know, we move through so many different issues so quickly that it's like, I don't know, 2 days ago? I don't remember what was 2 days ago.
I have no idea what happened 2 days ago. Were we even here 2 days ago?
I think so.
Really? But we had a good time. I mean, the meals have been nice and the company has been nice. I think the meal last night was huge. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, by the time the main course came, I was already stuffed.
Yeah. I literally ate too much last night. I went back to my hotel room, like a little sad that I had eaten quite that much. But yeah. Okay. That's a lot about food. We'll probably have to cut some of that. But, yeah, I don't, like, every time we come here, there's, like, you know, not just here, but every time we come here, I feel like we get to the bottom of and unblock a lot of things that are, like, had just been sitting there for a long time, because,
yeah.
I don't know, tell me what you feel about this, but, like, I feel like so much of standards is just, like, getting people to actually discuss things. Like, we open an issue. We do a bunch of work, like you do a bunch of work. I don't know if this... Actually, tell me if this holds true for you, because you have been so productive. I think it's because, like, whenever you do something, people want to look at it and respond. So uh-huh. it gets the attention. But, like, really, a lot of issues, they get some immediate attention, maybe. But then they just, like, fall off everybody's radar.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happens at CSS... working groups in general, but especially at face-to-face where it's like multiple days, we just churn through a lot and get attention to a lot of things, which in the end seems to unblock so much, right? Like,
yeah, and I sort of think of that as the process. So I try to write something that explains the issue, explains sort of the direction I'm thinking about moving. But often still with some open questions. And then I will add Agenda Plus and wait several months.
Right.
And then I often have to go read it again when the issue comes up at a face-to-face or a telecon, but particularly a face-to-face for more difficult issues, because I think, you know, there's a certain amount of in the room just talking to each other and hashing through the questions. And it's sort of like, at this point, anything you're proposing in CSS has a lot of questions. It has a lot of implications. There's a lot of how does it affect other properties? How does it affect different situations? What are the edge cases? And we have to think through those things, and having a lot of people in the room to bring up the questions.
A lot of people to say, aha, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly.
is infuriating. And ultimately necessary.
Exactly. Our decisions end up better for it. But first we have to yell at each other for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think of that as the process. Like, the written thing should come out a while before we have the discussion, so people have time to come up with their questions. But then it also means that I have to go back and remember what I even said.
I'm glad that you said that, because... you know, this is actually a thing that's hard to appreciate if you've never been in it before. But, you know, we did a show on Focus Visible and Inert when they shipped, because Alice and Rob and I worked on those together, both of them, and they shipped at roughly the same time. So we thought, oh, let's do like a celebratory show. And we did that, and we had to go back and look at the history because we couldn't even remember. And we were like, holy crap, this was 7 years ago. And then, like, looking at it, the thing that I'm trying to relate to here is, like, sometimes you get even these sort of, like, giga threads that just seem to go on forever and ever and ever. And,
colors.
They get 150, 200 different, and some people write, like, a book. It's not, like, a small thing, and they... they link to 7 other issues.
Yeah.
I don't know how much time I have spent in my life coming back to an issue when somebody finally, like, when it finally gets somebody else's attention.
Right.
And it's going to be on the agenda or whatever. And they're like, okay, we're going to discuss this thing. And I have to go back and look at it. And my heart just sinks because I'm like, oh my God, this is going to take forever. Like, I'm going to, like, I don't remember any of this at this point, you know? I think it's probably hard to appreciate, even, like, how many people who write specs then have to go, like, look up. Well, I don't remember the answer to that.
You know? Yeah, and I think particularly because, you know, there's enough of us looking at different parts of CSS that in a meeting like this, we're going through 50 different topics.
Yeah.
And you have to engage with all of them.
Right.
And by the time you get to the 5th, you don't remember the 1st exactly. or what you thought about it. And you have to go back and get your brain in that context again. It's hard to keep it all. You can't keep it all in your head. So you try to write down as much as possible.
Yes. So Mia works on specs and other things with Oddbird, right?
Yeah.
So how can people give you money and sponsor your amazing work so that you can keep doing it?
Oh, yeah. Oddbird does client work. So that can range from, we can help you build a website, help you build a design system, help you do a refactor, come in and help train your team on something. We're doing workshops all the time. And then also we have a lot of open source work that we do. So we have an open collective or GitHub sponsors. You can help sponsor some of our open source work, building polyfills, writing specs, all of that sort of thing. So oddbird.net would have links to all of that. Nice. And you can find us on Mastodon, Oddbird at Front End Social, or Mia at Front End Social.
So this might be one of our last recordings from live at the CSS Working Group. We're here with Joey Arhar. Joey, thanks for joining us. And is your first working group meeting, I understand.
Yes, it is.
Okay, your first in person, or
yeah, my first in person. I don't think I joined in any other ones virtually, so yeah, this is my first one.
Cool. So, what's it been like as your first?
It's been awesome. It's a lot of issues all day. It's I'm really impressed by everyone who can actually comment on every issue because there's so many things going on. I feel like the things I'm actually like relevant to and can talk in is like a small fraction, but like you know, some people like Tab and Alec, they seem to be commenting on literally everything. It's insane.
Yeah, they and Florian and it might just be those three who comment on everything. But yeah, I mean, there are some people who just have all of CSS more or less in their heads. Although we are getting to the point now where there's a fair amount of, this should work because of these reasons, and then someone else says, ah, but there's this other reason. They're like, oh yeah, crap. But yeah, because there's a lot of CSS now. So what's been most interesting to you out of the 3 days?
Well, I was just working on something. I was skipping ahead in the agenda and I saw that Florian opened an issue about transparency on the accent color property. And how some browsers throw away the transparency and Firefox incorporates it by transposing it on white. And it turns out that I wrote a patch in Chromium to make it throw away the alpha because it was rendering funny. So it was fun to kind of go back to that and I just re-implemented it. I'm excited to show it to everyone.
Okay. Yeah, cool. So, how did that feel to have someone describing behavior and you realizing, oh, that was me?
Oh, it felt great. It's really fun because, yeah, then I knew like exactly where to go to fix it and stuff.
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool. You've also been scribing a lot. In the CSS working group, on our calls, we use IRC. But as the discussion goes on, there's somebody basically doing their best to transcribe what everyone's saying into IRC, and you've volunteered for that a lot at this meeting.
I figure like it's the least I can do since I feel like I'm not like actively discussing a lot of the issues. Yeah, it's tough. I feel like, so I just type as fast as I physically can and try to literally write down every word that everyone's saying, but I tend to miss a lot of things and there's typos, and I feel like other people have a way of, like, they must be paraphrasing or something when they also scribe stuff. Yeah, it's pretty tough, and I'm kind of hoping that we'll have a bot, even if, like, some kind of bot could automatically transcribe for us and makes mistakes, I'd much rather correct those mistakes than literally try to type every single word.
So you're hoping for, like, real-time AI transcription kind of something?
That would be so nice to have.
It would be very nice, I have to be honest, because I have also done scribing in my time, and yeah, sometimes you have to paraphrase in order to keep up, and sometimes you just miss stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the notes are nice to have, because, you know, for meetings that I don't make it to, I can always go on GitHub and see, you know, what was discussed and why resolutions were made and all that kind of stuff, and it's like a permanent record that's really useful.
Right. So, of the topics that we've talked about, what are some that were, like, really exciting to you or interesting, or, you know, things you were like, that's awesome that we have that decision, that sort of...
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. There are some things about there's one issue about the select element that I agenda plus, but I don't think we're going to get to it at the face-to-face. I'm trying to remember.
When you say the select element.
Yes.
Describe that a little more.
So I'm working on a big project to make the select element styleable.
Okay.
And there's a new proposed value for the appearance property called base, which is supposed to opt you into this, like, new stylable mode for form control elements.
Okay.
I'm really hoping that we can make progress on it. Cause it's like my one big job this year.
Okay, so is this based on OpenUI work, or...?
Yes, it is very much based on OpenUI work. We've been incubating it in OpenUI since, like, 2019 or something like that, and I started working on it about a year ago. And, everyone there has put a lot of work into designing all kinds of little behaviors, everything from, like, you know, should the options have check marks next to them, to what should the keyboard behavior be, and all kinds of stuff. So there's a lot that's in there right now, and I'm kind of hoping that it'll be well received.
Right.
But it is a very, very big project. There's, like, so much that it goes into it.
So basically, this is a trial implementation of OpenUI's work on stylable form elements. And the idea is to get the working group to agree to do that, or to agree to do the switch to let us do that? Like, what is the issue to be discussed here, exactly?
Right. So the one thing was, like, bike shedding the name of the new appearance value.
And bike shedding, for those who are not familiar, is where everybody argues about what the exact name should be.
Yeah, right. And so the proposed name is base, but I don't think there's been, like, a ton of discussion about, like, is that the right name or not. So that was one of the first things we're going to get to.
Right.
But there's many, many issues, including, like, what exactly should these user agent styles be, which there are a lot of. How should the whole structure of the select element be?
Mm-hmm.
And then also this whole appearance value thing, in theory, should apply to all form control elements. So it almost is like an endless amount of possibilities and conversations about every form control. So
yeah, that would be a huge area of discussion. I mean, it's good that the OpenUI has the work there for the working group to look at and then be able to say, hey, is this going to fit with CSS as it currently exists? Like, is it going to work in browsers? Hopefully we do get to that this afternoon, but if not, I'm sure a near future working group weekly call will address it. So,
yeah, certainly. Lately we've established a task force that's a combination of the what working group and the CSS working group to talk about form control elements. So right now that's kind of where most of the discussion's happening.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Alrighty, well, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back being live at the CSS working group meeting, and I'm talking to Ian Kilpatrick.
Hi.
Ian, thanks for dropping in.
No, that's okay. It's great.
It's been quite a few days.
It has been.
What's been interesting to you the most?
So I'm actually looking forward to like one of the issues later this afternoon, which is about how do we allow developers to more, you know, to have more control over how an element affects, you know, the scrollable overflow of its parent. So, you know, one common request that developers have is, you know, they might like, you know, transform or place an element like up in the top right corner, but they don't want it to like contribute to like any, you don't want to be able to like scroll into it. It like might be like rotated, for example. And so you don't want to actually like allow that like little bit on the edge to be like scrollable. Like you don't want to, you know, allow, you know, the scroll to like scroll into that like little corner. You just want it to like clip, if that makes sense.
So you want it to be clipped off, but you can't use overflow scroll.
Yeah,
right.
Because exactly.
Then suddenly there will be a little horizontal scroller, so you can see the little bit of the new banner that you were trying to stick out the side.
Yeah.
Okay.
And there's like variations on this. So for example, you might want to like, you know, animate a element in, you know, via like transform or something like that.
Okay.
And so you want it still to contribute to scrollable overflow, but you don't want the transformed part of it to.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, you know, you're like animating something in, or like, you know, you're like manually, you know, you're animating along some curve, so it's like not on the compositor, so it's going to change the scrollable overflow each time. But you just like want to do that in such a way, but you don't want that like bit to be scrollable. You just want like at its final position to be scrollable.
Okay.
And so, you know, there's a proposal, you know, to do this. There might be like multiple switches. So, you know, one of these switches might be ignore, you know, this element's contribution to scrollable overflow completely. Just, like, ignore it.
Okay.
The other one might be just ignore the transform component of that case. So that covers, you know, the animating in type of case. Developers, you know, achieve... Yeah, it's very hard to do the sort of, like, transforming in case. They, like, ignore it completely. Developers... There's some hacks basically that people use to achieve this. I'll leave it at that for the sake of brevity. But yeah, it keeps on coming up when, you know, I chat with, you know, web developers. I was a web developer previously, in my former life, and yeah, I would have used this. So that's sort of what's exciting to me.
So how do you feel about the if thing? You want to talk about
that? Yeah, I think.
Okay, so let me introduce it. So, we just this morning, the working group decided to add an if statement, effectively, to CSS. What were you thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, it keeps on coming up with developers. I think in the initial explorations of container queries, we had, you know, considered something similar. You know, it'll be interesting to see where it lands. I think if is probably pretty good. Another thing you could imagine is like in functional language, you sort of just want to like, you know, match something. So you just want to say, hey, like if, you know, this variable is foo, then like do this, or, you know, and you just like do case matching. That could be another solution space, but probably, you know, to most developers, you know, the if function might be good enough.
And in what context does this appear, the if?
Sort of when you're doing like variable substitution, it applies basically. I don't know the exact details of the grammar. That's sort of, again, like slightly out of my wheelhouse, but conceptually, like there's no, I don't believe at least there's no fundamental like problem. But again, you know, I'm not the style expert on our team,
not the style expert.
You know,
okay.
I defer. You know, we might have Anders the runner. You know, go. You know, there's this fundamental issue that we need to consider or something like that. But yeah, on the surface, it's solves the developer need.
So be able to say, you know, if we have this variable, do this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Basically.
Yep. Exactly.
And apparently, from what I understood from the discussion, and it seemed like it was actually not just an if, but sort of an if, else, if, else, if, else.
Yeah, yep.
And then...
Yeah, and that kind of, like, you know, lends... Like, that's why I think of it a little bit more as, like, pattern matching type of thing versus like a if else, but you know, same, you know, different side of the same coin.
Right. Makes sense. That's
a scenario.
Cool. Anything else that's gotten you sort of?
Not too much. There wasn't sort of too much. There was layout stuff, but you know, nothing groundbreaking.
So then, what layout stuff was there?
What
I mean is, if it wasn't groundbreaking, then like, you know, what were the layout topics generally?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the time, you know, it's like small details on like how to you know, adjust things or fix things. You know, one thing in particular that came up is that people might be interested in is line clamp, for example, how that works. Right. So, you know, a few years ago, you know, people that are familiar with like line clamp on the web, you know that you have to write, you know, display WebKit box, WebKit box orient vertical, and then WebKit line clamp 2 or whatever.
Right.
And so internally, like browsers will, like Firefox and Blink at least, will like map display WebKit box over to display flex. WebKit box is effectively a flex box, but it's like some subtle modifications. But when you line clamp, for example, you really don't want it to be a flex box. And so both like Gecko and Blink will actually create a display block or a display flow route instead. And so, you know, part of the discussion was, you know, enshrining that like actual behavior into a spec, and then the exact mechanism of how we do that is another, you know, issue open for discussion. But I think like there is a path forward for a standards based, you know, line clamp implementation, which, you know, Agalia is working on at the moment, and I'm reviewing.
It's great. So far so good.
Yeah, so far so good. Okay. Implementation is looking really solid. There's a few corner cases that we need to look at, but yeah, I'm pretty hopeful in that we'll land on a pretty good solution there pretty soon.
Yeah, and I mean that's, as you know, that's what a lot of working group discussions actually are the okay, we've done the thing that the working group agreed to do, and we found these corner cases.
Yeah,
and how are we supposed to deal with those?
Yep.
How, you know, this line clamp happens to interact with max width in a flex environment when it's inside a grid in this way.
Yep.
And, you know, when you look at this spec and then this other spec, they directly contradict. How are we supposed to resolve this? And the working group's got to figure it out. So
fortunately, we're getting to a stage where, like, the boundaries between all of the different, like, layout algorithms are much more, like, solid than they were previously. They were, like, pretty, like, amorphous and, like, icky, to put it, like, especially, like, you know, the CSS2 spec says, like, a lot of things. Some of it correct, some of it, you know, wishful thinking.
Okay.
I don't think that you can, like, you know, for example, like, go through the CSS2 spec and come out with, like, a compliant, like, a web-compatible block layout, for example. To all of you that, you know, want to write a block layout algorithm out there, I wouldn't necessarily take the CSS2 spec, you know, as verbatim.
Okay.
For example. But yeah, I think, like, you know, more recently, like, you know, we've, like, solidified the boundaries between everything, so that there is, like, a pretty clean conceptual interface between everything, so we're not, you know, dealing with as many of these problems anymore.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, Ian, thank you.
Cool, thank you very much.
Okay, so CSS Working Group Face-to-Face, June 2024.
It's come to a close.
It's in the books.
Yep.
I fell asleep a few times. How long? 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you've been traveling quite a bit. I came out just for this working group, but you were You were at the Web Engines Hackfest, and yeah, you were at Agalia Week, and you're here now, and you're still not going home. And
yeah, I'm gonna go to Rome.
It's a little bit of an odyssey for you.
Yeah.
For me, it's in and out. I might have also fallen asleep, but I can neither confirm nor deny that.
It was not really the subjects or anything. It's just it's a lot of meetings, and
it's a lot of
travel
and a lot of mental power going into the concentration on the topics and all that sort of thing. Yeah, it can be very draining.
Yeah. So,
and also we discovered that in Spain you don't even start eating dinner until like 9:30 or 10 at night.
Oh yeah.
And so you get back to your hotel at 11:30 or midnight, and then you wind down and go to sleep, and then you got to get up to do stuff, and it's just
And you're supposed to be ready to talk about tomorrow's topics too. So you know. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think this is fun. I think Agalia did a pretty decent job of hosting it.
Yeah.
I think we
always
like having everybody here.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Hope the interviews are interesting.
Yeah, I think they will be.
Yeah.
It'll be all good. And then, maybe we'll do this again sometime.
Yeah.
Live from the face-to-face working group meeting.
Cool.